You are listening to Right Back At You, the 2000s pop music podcast where we have fun taking pop music seriously, hosted by David Lim and me, Joel Babington. Today, we are joined by a very special guest for our first Pop Book Club episode, and there couldn't be a better guest or book to be kicking this off with. Today, we are joined by Michael Cragg. Michael Cragg is a pop writer who has written for the likes of The Guardian, Vogue, GQ, The Face, Time Out, and Billboard, and has interviewed pop legends such as Kylie, Lady Gaga, Steps, Emma Bunton, Geraldine Estelle, Hallowell, Brandy, and Max Martin. You can also hear him on BBC Sound's brilliant new podcast, where it's at A Short History of Girl Bands, presented by Molly King. And today we are here to talk about his debut book, Reach for the Stars. Got it here in my hands.
There it is.
AKA the Pop Bible. It came out in March this year and is now available in paperback. It is the perfect Christmas present for any pop fan, and it features interviews with over 100 people from the world of pop, including members of The Sugar Babes, Spice Girls, Steps, Atomic Kitten, including my queen, Jenny Frost, and little old me and David are in the book too. Michael, welcome to Right Back At You and the very first Right Back At You book club. How are you doing?
I'm very good. I'm honored to be your debut guest. And that was a very lovely intro. You know, you sold the book. It's out in paperback now. Perfect for Christmas. I love that.
Yeah,
Thanks
for coming. Yeah.
Yeah. My work here is done. Yeah, bye.
No, thank you very much for joining us today. So anyway, let's do right up then. Where can everyone buy the book?
Well, you can buy it in all good shops. Well, I don't know if you can buy them in all good shops. It's definitely in WH Smith's. It's definitely in WH Smith's Travel. So if you're on your way home at Christmas and you're like, oh, I didn't bring a book, you can get it at the train stations, at airports. It's on Amazon. It's on all those good places and some bad places.
Yeah. Definitely. We're saying definitely all good bookshops. So if it's not in a good book, if it's not in a bookshop.
Leave. Yeah, leave.
Yeah, leave immediately. Michael, this book, honestly, from the moment, well, we were privy to knowing you were putting this together. When did we actually speak for this? Like 2020? Sometime?
Depths of lockdown, 21.
That's a great question. It was 21. I started it at the end of 2021 and I finished it in June of 2022 initially, and then I got a bit of extra time, and then it came out in March. So yeah, it takes a little while. So we probably spoke early 2022, I think.
It must be sometime like that. Yeah, but I mean, we've been privy to you kind of working behind the scenes, knowing this book was coming, and once it came out, we were just so blown away by A, the response for you, which is fantastic, but also B, the amount of people that you crammed into this book. I mean, for anyone that doesn't know, like, talk us through how you went about putting together this book, I guess, and how you focus your scope.
Well, I had a slight panic because I thought I had a bit more time, and then suddenly they were like, go, it has to be done in 6 months. And I was like, oh my God, I thought I had a bit more time. So I got Richard X was the first person I did.
Wow.
And Hannah Robinson. I don't know why I started there. I think I just emailed him and then I was like, oh, actually, could we do this like tomorrow? So I did them really quickly. And then I was like, right, let's just keep going while this momentum is started. And I think January like is quite a good time. No one's really got that much on. So I got quite a lot done then. And then once I sort of got the big names or some big names in, everyone else was slightly easier. I think they just needed to know it wasn't like a sort of vanity project and that I actually had a book deal and that it was actually coming out. Some people were like, oh, so, you know, is this for a book? And I'm like, yeah, no, it definitely is. And they were like, oh, you know, when's it coming out? And I was like, this is a real thing, I promise. I got some of the Spice Girls, and then it was like, okay, let's just work chronologically and sort of put them into chapters. And actually the easiest way was to sort of do them mainly by group. Like there are chapters on the bigger bands and then I put the boy bands together because it just would have been, I mean, I could have just kept going. It could have been 1,000 pages long. So I needed to sort of whittle it down while also trying to cram as many people in as possible.
Well, look, we said yes without even knowing Richard X was involved.
Yes, and then so many people followed once they knew you two were on.
Oh, yes, like, right, exactly.
Here we go. People I couldn't get before were like, okay, I'm in.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Look, you should have just thought we would have texted people. We would have said, what are you doing? So let's take it even a step even further back. Like, how did the book come about? What inspired you to write this historical text, that pop Bible that we do need?
Yeah, so that's what I thought. People needed it, for one, because there wasn't anything about this period at all, really, that took it sort of seriously, but not like really seriously, yeah, as in like in a dry way. I didn't want it to be like, not to slag off Pitchfork, but I didn't want it to be like in that sort of sense. I didn't want me to write about that period all the way through in like a sort of normal way. I wanted it to be an oral history, just because you then get like light and shade, fun stories, slightly sadder stories, the rise and fall, Craig David, of that period and of their lives. And they didn't really get to speak about that at the time. So I thought, as much as people know the big stories, they don't know necessarily like the sort of smaller ones, or what it was really like to be sort of worked in that way. And now the record industry is very different. And so that makes it seem like I had this idea for a long time. I didn't. I already had a meeting with my publisher lined up, and I didn't have any ideas. And I told him that I had quite a few. And so I was sort of thinking about what I could do. And I was folding some laundry, and I was like, what if I did an oral history on noughties pop?
Love that.
And oral history just, I don't know. The ones I've read are always quite serious. They're always on like highbrow cultural things, you know, like breaking down Mad Men or The Wire or Radiohead or something. So I just thought it would be funny as well to put this into that.
Well, it's very much what we love. We take pop music seriously, is what we say on this podcast. Because, yeah, like you said, it's also, A, you can't do it that seriously, because pop is meant to be fun.
Yes.
It's fun. It's joy. That's what we love joy. It for. Yeah.
And also for like our age, our demographic, our audience, it's very nostalgic for us. So I don't want anything too serious. Like, remind me of the Top of the Pops performances, the outfits, and all the like backstage gossip and drama and all that. Like, that's what I want. I don't want anything too serious.
And obviously there'd been the ITV reunion, but it felt a bit too focused on like the negative.
The tragedy.
And as much as I knew there'd have to be like a bit of that weaved through. I didn't want any of the chapters necessary to end really on a like downward note. And even like the 5 chapter where things, you know, did get quite horrible, doesn't, you know, 3 of them are still together. They still sort of release music. They're not kind of, they don't hate the experience looking back as much as maybe they would have done if I tried to do this sort of 5 years after it happened. You need like the space of 20 years, I guess, to sort of have people be like, actually, I really loved what we did back then.
So you already had a book deal before anything?
I just had a meeting. Right. So you sort of go in and you're like, oh my God, look at this idea I've got. And then they sort of say, this can never work. You're mad. Or they're like, oh, this is great. Now you've promised to interview all these people. Why don't you go off and do it? And I had no idea that any of them would say yes. So
you just went in and you went, 2 words, Mylene Class.
Yes.
And then they wrote a check.
You know what though? That Mylene thing, it reads so well, but that was emailed. And often emailed ones you don't really get the sort of back and forth, and but she answered the questions in such a way and then just continued to sort of bring in other details. I was like, this sounds like we had a really long interview. So shout out to Mylene.
She is a pro.
It did really well with the email questions, to be fair.
I want to know, so how did you then, speaking about emails, interviews, you chatted to us for a half an hour on Skype, or Zoom even, Skype throwback.
Is that still a thing?
How did you... So the book is laid out amazingly. You cover from 96 to 2006.
Yeah.
All these different people, all these different stories. I mean, I'm sandwiched in between Spice Girls on one page, which is a real dream come true. How did you just take everyone's quotes and make it into this brilliant, cohesive book?
So I sort of... I remember that you guys talked a lot about the Spice Girls and sort of Victoria and their solo stuff. And I knew that I wanted some solo stuff in there. So I sort of just had that in the back of my head when I was like, right, I know those guys did that. I made a list of everyone that I wanted and then sort of put yes next to them when they had agreed. And then I put like done next to them when it was done. And then I put those names into another thing and was able to be like, right, David talked about Spice Girls and Victoria and like S Club 7 or whatever. So he can go in like three chapters.
Oh my God. And it's so organized. Yeah. Quite forensic,
because I was
really.
Like, if I don't organize this, my brain is just going to like melt out of my ears. So I'd be like, right, that person was really good on this. Obviously some of the acts, it's obvious. It's like, okay, well, you know, Emma or whoever goes in the Spice Girls one. But with the sort of non-pop stars, it was a bit harder to remember exactly who had said what about. Because I was jumping around all over the place trying to get as much
in. Yeah, you've got songwriters, producers, you have PRs in there.
So it was like a bit of a maze. Yeah, and then I just thought, God, chronological order is going to make this so much easier, because if you've already got to like worry about who's going to be where, it's so much easier if it just runs chronologically as much as possible and then chuck people in. And then what's quite good is that I had until June and it was sort of done, and then they were like, you have a bit of extra time, so I could go back and slot people in who I wanted but maybe thought, oh, I've run out of time. But actually they work really well, and I knew then later on what I needed from them, so I didn't have to sit with them for half an hour or an hour and it'd be like this sprawling chat. I could go to them and say, look, what did you think about this specific moment? Like Belle and Sebastian versus Steps at the Brits. I was able to just slot people in who could be like, oh, I was there. Everyone was like, who the fuck are Belle and Sebastian? Like, and so that was fun to be able to know what I needed from people. But that took a little while to get to.
So you didn't have just a wall with
like a
all
mind
our
map.
Faces on it and then these strings.
Oh my God, that's all my brain was. It wasn't like, I didn't visualize it, but inside my brain was that, like I would go to sleep and I would be like, okay, maybe this person, actually this quote, and then a quote would come to me and I was like, who said that? And
No.
I need to try and find that from my transcribing. And I transcribed it all myself because I couldn't let it out of my sight. I got really like panicked that if I sort of emailed an MP3 to someone, I don't know what I thought was going to happen.
Me and David would leak it.
Yeah, exactly. leaked albums. So, I was really paranoid about it. So when I actually handed it over, I was absolutely relieved.
Speaking of handing over, I think you've said on another interview before that like a fair amount or bits of it had to be cut. I'm not sure to what extent, but you had to sort of trim it down.
Yeah.
Tell me, like, what did you cover? Is there loads? Is there a deluxe edition we could get in the future?
A deluxe edition, yes.
I really wanted to do that, but it was already over in the first place. So it ran a bit over, and then you get it back and it has like lots of notes on it saying, I think this can go, I think this is a bit boring. And obviously I'm, like you guys, obsessed and like on Pop Justice Forum all the time and on Wikipedia, and I'm like, people need to know this. But obviously I had to step back from that and be like, this book is meant to be sort of slightly more for everyone.
Yeah, it didn't need two chapters on Cleopatra's second album.
No,
sadly.
So like quite a lot of All Stars had to come out because
that's
I did like
a shame.
Whole Yeah, I thought All Stars were interesting because it was like in the slipstream of S Club 7 and they had a TV show like S Club did and it was on ITV and not BBC. And so there was this sort of like slight knockoff feel about them, which I quite liked. And obviously they didn't last very long and they weren't very successful. But the man I spoke to, whose name I now can't remember, was very funny about it and was like, you know what? I knew it was over like when the first single came out, and I was like, oh wow, that sort of does sum up like how brutal it can be. But my editor guy was like, this is, who cares? And then there was a longer bit about the Saturdays. There was more on the Saturdays. Even though they were outside of the sort of time thing, I just thought it was interesting that like Girls Aloud then took the Saturdays on tour, who then took Girls Can't Catch on tour.
Yes.
So there was a little bit more about that. And the Girls Aloud chapter was very long, as was the Sugar Babes chapter. So
they had to be cut down.
Yes, I was like, well, you know, come on. I wanted it all to be in there, but obviously I do understand that you need the flow of the chapters to sort of work.
What is great that it's like a hefty
Oh my goodness. The hardback is like a weapon.
Yeah, self-protection. but it does, it's both like great value for money, and I'm not saying this in a selling it way, but it is great value for money because there's so much to it. But it is also, I was whizzing through it, but I was like having to stop myself because I wanted it to last as long as possible. So on one hand, I'm reading it really quickly, but on the other hand, I'm like, no, take it chapter at a time or a little bit at a time. So
yeah, and a lot of people have said that, which I'm really happy about because I didn't want it to be like a slog, and I didn't want it to be only for like people that liked that music. As much as, you know, if you don't like that music, then we're probably not going to be friends. But like, you can buy the book. And, you know, I wanted it to be like the story of a period as well as like the story of that pop music. Like, what were we like then? What was culture like? What was going on? People sort of forget, I think, even like, you know, buying CD singles or, you know, queuing up to do whatever, like meet and greets and all that. You know, it was a mad time, and it's not like that anymore.
So I know that you have obviously spoken to so many people, but was there anyone in particular or a group in particular you really wanted that yes. just didn't make it in time or for some reason didn't come on board?
Yeah, I couldn't get anyone from Pop Idol for various different reasons. So Gareth, I never heard back from Gareth, and Will Young, I wanted to speak to, but I just think there was so much going on with his own project. You know, Michelle McManus was having a baby. Leona was having a baby. Leona, I thought, would have been great because obviously she was the sort of superstar of the early X Factor, and after it not really sort of hit its stride at that point. So for various reasons, those people didn't. And I would have liked to sort of track down, you know, all five members of Five.
Well, if it makes you feel any better, Zoe Burkett has never replied to our emails.
I emailed her. She never replied. She's got like so many emails out there, and I tried them all, and no reply.
Zoe Burkett 56, Zoe.Burkett 29 at hotmail.com.
And she's on like the stage, isn't she? And I think I tried like her.
You waited outside
agent.
Stage door.
Yeah, I mean the police did get in touch and tell me to just chill. But,
the true elusive chanteuse. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Zoe never got back. So weird. Pop Idol is this sort of. You know, I tried to cover it as best as I could, but it's hard when people aren't sort of, if you can't get them. That was the thing. If I couldn't get these people, I had to just sort of skip it, really. I'm gonna take this moment. And obviously PRs are tricky because a lot of them are still working. So I didn't want, I wanted them to, but they obviously didn't necessarily want to ruin relationships.
That was a very
Simon
great.
Simon Jones,
Joel, that's your favourite part of the
this
anecdotes,
is, yeah,
wasn't
this
it?
This is perfectly going to my next question. So I wanted to know if you have any favourite or standout moments that have been living rent-free in your mind since writing the book. I will start with mine.
Yes.
Simon Jones. I mean, so great his stories in the book. But my
PR
favorite
legend.
My favourite that stood out was him when he was looking after one of my all-time faves, Martine McCutcheon. And she said, now, Simon, when... Apologies, Simon, for any misquotes. Now, Simon, when you get these offers in, I need you to think, what would Barbara do? And she is not referring to former colleague of hers, Barbara Windsor. She is referring to stage and screen veteran Barbara Streisand. But look, I'm a stage school girlie like Martine. I appreciate where she's coming from.
You gotta set the bar. You gotta set the standards.
I think Simon was getting a lot of messages from people being like, oh my God, with like screenshots of that exact quote. I mean, it's the one that like nearly everyone mentions, and I had to crowbar that in. I don't even think it's connected to anything that has come before it. I think maybe one person says, oh, we sign Innocent Records, who she was signed to, had signed a lot of female artists, including, so I got, you know, he said Martine McCutcheon. I was like, right, that's where I can stick this completely irrelevant.
That's all we need.
Yeah. I think any of the Jerry stories, you know, obviously the Some Girls sort of issue, which I do a whole chapter on, and then, you know, like her being on a horse and Old Compton Street.
Iconic.
Sort of trying to flog that single. And like, did this make it about the unicorn? Like her thinking that like unicorns were real.
Yeah.
It sounds like something Jerry would say. Yeah.
Yeah. So she, So she was anything to do with her. I wanted as many sort of stories about her. So definitely those. I mean, all of the like Nadine talking about being hungover while doing ITV's Grease Mania.
Oh, that is fun. Because it also makes the clips make so much sense. Because
yeah, because I watched it back after that and I was like, she looks grey. She looks so ill. So yeah, during rehearsals, she was completely hungover and she kept vomiting. And they injected her with like a muscle relaxant to stop her from being sick, and she said that all it did is just made her sick, but in like a really relaxed way.
Oh,
which
brilliant.
Makes sense. But she was like, yeah, she sort of can't watch that footage.
Oh, bless her. Because yeah, I mean, look, five girls, don't know if any of them knew the choreo, but it's a moment in time.
I mean, to anything.
It's a moment in time that we absolutely love, you know.
And also even that, like, just people reminding me of those Grease Manias or ABBA Manias or any of those ITV shows. It's like, oh, my God, yes, of course. Like,
bring it back.
We talk about this on our podcast a lot, like, because I didn't grow up in the UK, so I would, like, randomly come across stuff like this on YouTube years and years later, and I would ask Joel, I was like, what was that?
It's mainstream TV, David.
Guys, the world needed Rachel Lauren Stevens covering Knock on Wood on Discomania. Like,
I didn't know that
came from that show. I downloaded that off LimeWire just thinking, oh, isn't this fun?
What I must know about is the infamous quote on the back of your book.
Yes.
From Louis Walsh. Please, can you give me the whole everything?
Okay, here we go. So I got given his mobile number.
Brilliant.
I won't reveal my sources, but I got given his mobile number. And I was like, God, do I just text him? So I text him explaining like who I was and what I was doing. No reply. No reply. Then I sent another one. He did reply and he just gave me an email address. So I emailed that and obviously didn't hear anything back.
ZoeBurkett.com,
like, yeah. Yeah, exactly. ZoeBurkett56. So then I was like, right, I'm not letting this go. I've got his phone number. So I texted him a bit later and I was like, look, this person's spoken to me. It's a real thing. Like, I'm doing a whole chapter on Girls Aloud and I'd love for you to take part, blah, blah, blah. So he was like, okay, great, fine. Call me on this date. So I did. And he was like, oh, I'm busy. Call me again tomorrow or whatever. So I did. And he was like, right, you've got 10 minutes. Let's go. And I was like, okay. And I was like, as I went to say the first question, he said, no one is going to read this. No one cares. No one reads books anymore. I get asked to do these things all the time and I never hear anything about them ever again. And I was like stunned into silence. And then I was like, oh, okay. And then we just continued with the thing. And so I had, like 10 minutes. And as funny, as horrible as it was at the time, it was funny. And every single one of his quotes reads exactly like Louis Walsh, which I think is key when you're doing like an oral history. You want to be able to sort of hear them in that person's voice. So yeah, once I was quite hysterical at that point because I had to send chapters in every so often just to show that I was actually doing them to my publisher. And they were like, you know, where's the money? And Louis Walsh has just said this. And I sent him the thing and he was like, oh, that's great. We'll just put that on the book. And I was like, genius. I'm glad that it stayed. It's on the paperback one as well. But I'm glad that some people did read the book because that would have been quite distressing if we'd smacked that on the back of the book and then it didn't sell any copies and Louis was actually right all along.
Was there like anyone that has come out that really surprised you that's a fan of the book?
Well, I had no... Obviously, we sent it to some people, so we hoped that they might like say something. But when Neil Tennant...
Oh, yes.
Put a thing on their Instagram, and they always sort of sign it off with like one of them. So it said Neil at the bottom, and someone sent it to me completely out of the blue. We hadn't sent him a copy. I'd asked them to be in the book because of the Girls Aloud connection, but they'd sort of politely declined. So I was like, okay, fine. So him really liking it was, that really blew my mind. I mean, Richard Osman is like the biggest fan of this book. He mentioned it on Twitter twice, Instagram, and then when he was doing a Radio 2 show a few weeks ago, almost the entire show at the beginning was built around your first gig. And I think that was somehow connected to the book. And he talked about the book like a number of times. And we didn't expect that. Like, you know, you sort of hope that someone might say nice things about it. But I mean, that's what you need really in books. It's so hard unless you're sort of a famous person already. You just need this sort of word of mouth thing to happen. So I'm happy that that's happened sort of organically without, I mean, I talk about it all the time on social media, so people are probably sick of it, but without ramming it down people's throats, hopefully.
We're all obsessed with it, so don't worry
about
it.
Okay, that's good.
Like, you've got to promote it, so don't.
You've got to promote it. I mean, got to bring some joy into people's lives.
So, Michael, in honor of Reach for the Stars, we have asked you to pick three songs from people you spoke to for the book. So,
yes.
Let's dive into it.
Okay.
Who is the what is the first song you've picked?
So I've gone with No Good Advice by Girls Aloud, obviously.
Never heard of it. Our followers will not
be aware.
You
should check it out. Yeah, they're pretty good, actually. Yeah, they're the band that Frank could have been. I was doing a thing in Manchester and Paul Flynn, who's in the book and was on the panel with me, said that he didn't really care for Sound of the Underground and that it was No Good Advice that actually sort of cemented
really?
How good they were. And I was like, that's interesting. But also, I don't sort of agree, but it is an interesting one because they had to follow up what was such a sort of odd, brilliant moment of like sort of not doing the sort of assumed that everyone just thought it was going to be like a rubbish ballad and they came out with this. So you sort of thought, well, there's even more pressure now on what's going to follow. And then when I was talking to Nicola for the book, I had a vague recollection that they had tried to sort of get rid of Xenomania early on. But when she sort of said it was when they would play the demo of No Good Advice that they were a bit like, hang on, what is this? Like, why are we doing sort of indie, essentially? You know, the riff is a bit Franz Ferdinand, like it's sort of Blondie, My Sharona.
My Sharona,
it's not really, it's not really what was going on at the time for a girl band, you know, not that they wanted to sound like Atomic Kitten, but I think they were a bit like, well, why aren't we working with Biff Stannard or why aren't we doing what they're doing over there? Or they would only listen to sort of R&B. So it didn't really make sense. Mm. So I just thought actually that song is such a key moment of like, them going with this process, which is very different and very sort of odd and very weird, and just giving into that. I think the song is great. And obviously the video is amazing.
Oh my God, the silver outfits.
The silver outfits and the tambourines. They all got like huge bruises on their legs. It was like, it was a lot. And so, yeah, No Good Advice, I think, is the one that sort of cemented them for me as like, okay, this is going to continue. This weird brilliance is not just like a fluke or a one-off. This is going to be like the template for them now.
And I think also like the lyrics have so much attitude. It really positioned them as this like kind of not holding back any punches kind of girl group. We're in your face. It's something that, I mean, listening back, I remember the first time I heard it because weirdly we got Sound of the Underground and No Good Advice pushed to Australia. I remember reading a review of it in the Herald Sun. And yes, the journalist did reference My Sharona. And I was very intrigued and I was like, okay, they sound really cool. But then literally after those two singles, we didn't hear anything
else
like, in Australia.
Australia's too far. Yeah. We're not going to go to Australia.
Life got cold. It doesn't get cold down there.
They don't need that one. They can't relate to that.
Yeah, cannot relate to the lyrics. Yeah, it is interesting, isn't it? Because I've always thought they live in the same world. But yeah, Sound of the Underground is so different, very drum and bassy. And then No Good Advice is like Queens of Rock.
Yeah, and it was like guitars, you know, guitars for good. It wasn't just like, you know, weedy men with guitars. It was like, okay, we can keep this pop, but we can also realize that actually this is probably where music is heading for a bit. So why don't we try and do something interesting with it? And I think the lyrics are sort of, you know, the Moon Baby thing, Miranda's sort of thing hadn't worked and Brian's deal with London Records hadn't worked. And so
it was a Moon Baby song, wasn't it?
Yeah. So the song itself is like, right, I'm not listening to what anyone else is saying. Like, we're just going to sort of plow ahead with this. And I think Girls Aloud were sort of in that position, even early on. I think Radio 1 were like, we played Sound of the Underground, we're not playing them again. They've come from a TV talent show. And you're like, but this music is so much better than Franz Ferdinand. You know, what are you thinking? So I think that it shows a lot of like what they were up against early on.
Yeah. So they gave us our UK number 2 hit. And so, Michael, for anyone that doesn't know, you've spoken to Nicola, Nadine, and our Kim as well for the book.
Kim, Brian Higgins, Miranda Cooper, John Shave.
Yeah. Wow. So any GA fans haven't yet, this is a book you need to dive into. And so you did an in-person event with lovely Nicola.
I did. Oh, my God.
How yes, was
foils,
that?
The big foils.
Foils,
on
sorry,
the
not
road.
Water stones.
Yes, I did. And it was very exciting. And it was, yeah, I mean, it sold out because it was Nicola and I was, and everyone was like, oh my God, this is the first book event we've sold out in such a long time. It's because of this book. And I was like, I love that. But also Nicola Roberts is here. And the front row was like just super fans that were filming like the entire thing. So, you know, it was lovely.
How did that come about? Did you reach out and be like, hey, the book's out?
Yeah, because I really loved speaking to her for the book. And I thought, who would be sort of, who would be like good to chat to who has like quite a unique experience with that world for various different reasons? You know, like she sort of had a hard time of it, but also was in like this incredible band that was doing sort of different things. And, you know, and Nicola is sort of, she was very honest when she was like, you know, we didn't always love the songs, or we didn't always love the process, or, you know, we didn't like doing promo, and we'd often be called in and told off because we looked really bored. And we'd have to do ITV Grease Mania, and Nadine was throwing up everywhere. So, I thought, let's see if Nicola will do this. And Peter Lorraine, who obviously is a legend of this period and is in the book across 7,000 pages, he made that happen. So, Shout out to Peter Lorraine.
So, yeah. And Nicola said some really wonderful things about the book even before the event, didn't she? She said something about yes. how you captured it perfectly or something.
Yeah, which was very lovely. She put that on Instagram stories, which I immediately screenshot in case, you know,
she
changed her mind. but yeah, she said it was, you know, as close to sort of being there as possible. I don't know. I mean, oh. I was, in, you know, probably crying at that point because I was quite hysterical by the time the book came out. So yeah, she was very lovely about it. And it was great to sort of, yeah, I just wanted to honor that band as much as possible because I think even if you're like, all the music from that period was awful, you're just like, well, you can't say
you
that.
Can't
like,
say
you
that
just
about
can't
Girls
say
Sugar
that.
Babes.
No.
Yeah.
No,
and, you know, and you can't say that about a lot of it, but I think if you are genuinely one of those sort of boring people that's like, I only like weird creative pop that does odd things, you're like, well, I mean, there's a whole band that did that for like hundreds of singles and songs. So like, maybe have a listen.
So what's your next choice for us?
What's Your Flavor by Craig David.
Wow.
It's not my favorite Craig David song, but I thought it was, it's a really interesting one, I think. It was 2002. Craig was obviously like massive on that first album in America and here, and he'd taken what is a very sort of UK sound and sort of turned it into this quite glossy, you know,
very marketable thing.
It was, yeah, like this
first
huge
album,
thing.
Craig David was big in Australia. Like he was face of like British R&B.
I think it sold like 15 million copies or something, or like definitely over 10, I think. So absolutely huge. And so 2002 was like this really pivotal second album was coming. Bo Selecta started in 2002 as well. So it was this odd time. And then What's Your Flavor is not necessarily what people wanted or expected from Craig David. And I thought it was really interesting because people sort of forget that we were quite skeptical of British pop stars becoming American. I think there was this weird distrust of like getting slightly above your station, going to America, coming back very glossy, very sort of
LA
changed in some way. Yeah, very LA, very like And implied in that is like very up yourself and like, who do you think you are, I think. And Craig lent into that fully. Like, what's your flavor, FLAVA? Mm. He mentions like $20, I think, in the lyrics. The album
not
is
20
called
quid, mate. Oh.
Yeah, and the album is called Slicker Than Your Average, which is not something that anyone was saying.
Yeah.
But it's, at the same time, I think if that song came out now, yeah, it has all the characteristics of like what could take off on sort of TikTok. Like, the lyrics are mad. The video is insane, where he's like this Willy Wonka character. Fans have to like buy loads of CDs to win like a golden CD to get to come on into his like chocolate factory. As much as like, I'm not comparing Craig to Willy Wonka, but like eventually after the Bow Selector thing, that is sort of what happened. He lived in a hotel in Miami by himself at the top of like a hotel, and his career did take this slightly odd path. So I think within that song, which I sing all the time, weirdly, because I just think Apple and Cinnamon, for some reason, that way he sings that always comes into my head. I just think that song sums up like a weird turning point for him, and obviously the sort of downward slope that eventually he had like this renaissance, which, yeah, I'm really happy that, yeah, that eventually happened.
But you know what this reminds me of as you're saying that, Sugar Babes, when they went into Sweet 7 era, where the music was more polished, Americanized, again, like kind of, I mean, by that stage with Sugar Babes, they were already moving quite far from the original blueprint of One Touch, but that's to be expected with pop, you evolve. But I think when Sweet 7 came out, especially with Get Sexy, it was kind of, people felt like, oh, is this too far now?
Yeah. I don't acknowledge that album, and I don't,
oh, I don't see, I don't know her.
I don't talk about that lineup in the book, and that wasn't necessarily intentional. I just completely forgot to, I didn't, like, once Keisha left, I was like, well, they don't exist anymore, sorry. But I agree, Sweet 7 was that, like, what's your flavor? It was their Slicker Than Your Average, essentially. At a time when I think Americans and the American producers were doing that so much better. So I think it didn't help that either. Like, if you wanted that sound, you could go and listen to sort of Destiny's Child and Timbaland stuff and Pharrell. And, you know, like, that was everywhere and it was brilliantly done. And so, yeah, I just thought that song is like this weird curio. I think it's really mad, which I like. And also, Emenike made a really good point in the book. He was like, for a lot of black artists, UK artists at that time, there was like a ceiling.
Yeah.
And it was like, well, how high can you go if you're just going to stick to the UK? So I don't blame Craig for being like, you know what? I'm going to go to America. I'm big there now. People want to work with me. Let's go and see what I can do and try and like take it to the next level. I just think that song was not the necessary vehicle to do that.
Yeah. But you're right. You know, historically, UK haven't done very well by our R&B artists here.
Yeah.
They always fumble it for some reason, especially in the noughties. We see a lot of that happen.
Yeah. And also Garage was coming to an end, so he couldn't necessarily keep doing Garage, that because he would have just looked a bit behind the times. Yeah.
Michael, what was Craig David like to chat with then? What was your interview approach with him?
So I have interviewed him a couple of times, and you do have to focus Craig. He's quite like a deep thinker, like quite a broad, you know, he takes things sort of, goes on like quite fun tangents, but when you don't have
David editing me on this podcast
when you don't have a huge amount of time and you're very like anxious to get through like this career and like get him to talk about stuff, I was a bit like, come on Craig, let's go. But actually he was really good for this one because I wasn't sure if he would talk about the Bow Selector stuff, because obviously it's horrible, you know, it wasn't a pleasant time for him, but he was good at just being like, you know, I was angry, but I didn't want to be sort of poisoned by this anger. Like, what was that going to achieve at the end of the day? Like, his best revenge, he didn't say this, but his best revenge was to sort of wait it out and come back. And, you know, he had like another number one album sort of not that long ago. So he was good, and he was good on that, and sort of good at talking about the stuff that maybe you'd think are not things he'd like to go back and think about.
So yeah, that was a UK number 8 for our Craig.
Number 8 for the first single from your second album. That's so bad.
Yeah, back then it's like, uh-oh.
Yeah. But
the label must have been scrambling.
Yeah. But as you say, Craig went onwards and upwards and is a bloody national treasure. But yeah, it is really interesting with those UK stars going to America, like Natasha Bedingfield, it happened. Joss Stone picked up that American accent.
Oh my God, yes.
So yeah, it's just like,
Now obviously we're slightly less troubled by it because of the, you know, everything that's gone on streaming and globalization, all that stuff. But like back then, it was sort of a real thing, I think, to be like, ah, who do you think you are?
So, Michael, can you please go to our third and final track?
So this is for the indie fans out there. This is Caught in the Middle by A1, which I just think is perfect, maybe? Perfection. I don't know. There's something about this song that I just...
It's magic, isn't it? Much.
It is magic. I'm convinced that they were just ahead of their time in terms of like going from like a pop thing with the first two albums to like, right, let's try this. And then, you know, a few years later, take that, come back with Patience wearing, you know, big M&S coats and like chunky scarves. And I'm like, hang on, A1 did that in the video for Caught in the Middle and no one seemed to care. So I just think, and even their journey is so interesting in that they were put together as songwriters. The whole point was let's not put like two singers who can maybe write with like two models. Let's get four songwriters and see what they can come up with as a boy band. And so I think this was their chance to be like, well, that's why we were put together. Let's see if we can maybe make it slightly more sort of, you know, I don't know, credible in inverted commas, but let's also keep it pop. And that's what they did, I think, with that.
The video, I was watching it earlier today. I was like, oh my God. This is the serious version of Steps' Heartbeat.
I knew you were going to say that.
it's like less built set green screen and more actual locations.
Yeah.
Sexy and cold, wrapped up.
Yeah.
So who did you get to chat to for A1 for the book?
Just Christian.
My favorite. Christian is my favorite. He's gorgeous. Not to take it there, but he is.
And he was in like this huge, sort of quite expensive looking studio in Norway. And I was like, okay, this is interesting. Quite like still quite muso about it, you know, like sat in front of like a big desk and, you know, wood paneled walls and all of that stuff. I think he had a chunky like knitted jumper on. So it was very like, as I remember. And he was very good.
You saw him and you went, that's our Christian.
Yeah, I was like, he's still the same old brand new you, I said to him. And it was great. I wanted one of them to be in it, at least. Like, I wanted A1 to be in it because I just think that song alone is enough. And obviously they had a sort of very difficult time because they had to honour the, you know, they had to, it was a period where you had to keep going. Like, albums would come out every year and singles would drop all the time, but they had to take time off to honour the death of their fans. Because
in Indonesia,
there was a crush at one of their events and some fans died. So they honoured the sort of mourning period of that, which I think was like 2 or 3 months, maybe a bit longer, maybe longer than that, actually. And that obviously just meant that they sort of regrouped and took a bit of time and they were like, actually, this is what we want to make. Let's give this a go. And so that album followed that period. And I think for that reason alone, I was quite interested to sort of speak to them about that and, you know, how kind of that changed what was going on. And then shortly after, like, one of them quit. They're still going now, but like,
yeah, weren't they at Mighty Hoopla this year? Joel, did you see them?
I didn't see them, but yeah, and they still do really big shows in Asia and they do headline shows in the UK.
And individual members do lots of Eurovision stuff. I think two of them have competed to write like the Eurovision winner, Eurovision representative for Norway.
I mean, we know Ben co-wrote Electric for Lisa Scott Lee. So
yes, he did. Exactly.
Pedigree.
Well, Caught in the Middle by A1 gave us a UK number 2 smash hit.
Oh,
so
what
good
kept
on
that off number 1? Oh,
Steps Heartbeat. I don't know. but yeah, good on you boys. And yeah, it is really lovely to see them still going strong today. Like in Asia, like 10 or so years ago, their album beat Adele to number 1, I think. Like they've had more music, still going for it, still headlining. So good on you, lads.
The A1 is standing for number 1 in Asia, yeah.
Yeah, still doing that not very good cover of Take On Me. But, you know, we'll forgive them.
Look,
that,
they gave us Same Old Brand New You. They gave us Caught in the Middle. We will forgive it.
I think Christian was a bit like, we were all songwriters and then we were told to do this cover of this, like, classic song and we were all a bit like, okay.
Got him a number one.
It got him a number one, and I think that is what the label intended, so job done.
Well, that's our mini EP of greatest hits from the Reach for the Stars book. So, Michael, to wrap this up, what's next for you? Is there another book on the cards?
What's the future for Michael?
You all popped out.
People keep messaging me being like, do a part two. And I just don't know what that would be. As in, like, I think if you just followed it on, it doesn't really work because X Factor just sort of took over. You'd want to do like One Direction, obviously, which I think would be great. But I can't see anyone letting me near them, you know, at this point. And then it's very American, I think. Gaga, Katy Perry.
Yeah.
That sort of took over. So I don't think I'll do like a sort of, you know, part two oral history. I'd rather not do an oral history again for the time being, just because it's a lot. I'd rather write a whole book than do an oral history.
This is also like what you captured was a very specific moment of time. I mean, it's what we have a whole podcast about. It isn't. I mean, if you want to do a part two, bloody go for it. But it isn't like, oh, I've started a series of the decades of music. It was pop. As we know and love it, when you think of pop, that's what it covered.
Yeah, and exactly. And it was like a specific time, like not even like the start of a decade to the end. It was like a specific 10-year period. And obviously you had to start with the Spice Girls. So, yeah, it doesn't really have a sort of sense of that moving forward. But yeah, I have done or started to think of another book. I haven't done it. I don't know why I said that. But I have thought about doing another one.
You're constantly in the pop world. You know, you do your own interviews for publications, which I guess is always centered around pop. I would just love it one day if I open up Twitter and it's like, oh, I've interviewed this, you know, Icelandic indie new jazz metal band or something.
Oh, my God, yeah.
Something random.
Sometimes I'm just like, maybe I do just want to speak to, I don't know,
Lordy.
Norwegian nose flute. Yeah. Champion or something, but
pop is your passion. Yeah
You have to want to care about it, especially like if you're going to do a book. Oh my God, it can't be something that you're like half-assed about, because it's a lot to like put yourself through. Not to sound like, you know, it was that difficult, but
so I'm guessing like lockdown was you were working on it a lot during then.
No, but I do think lockdown put the idea in my head. I just had to wait for it to like get to the front, because I was like listening to all this music so much. I think a lot of people were. I was watching a lot of things on YouTube that was just fun and like bright and like, oh my God,
escapist.
Dance routines.
Yeah,
like, and I was getting a bit sick of, you know, 2-minute 30 songs. I was like, oh yeah, like these songs are sort of 4 minutes long. There's like a middle eight and there's
a bridge.
Key changes and a bridge and like
the
fun.
The Michelle Williams of the world, you know, that's where they flourished.
And so I bought a lot on eBay. I got a lot of DVDs because I have a Blu-ray player. I don't know why. And so I got a lot of like girls, you know, I got all the Girls Aloud DVDs, the live shows and Kylie ones.
Did you get Girls Aloud style DVD?
I think I do have that. Does it come with something else?
It comes with Kimberly telling you about internet safety.
Oh.
All the music videos.
We just did our Girls Aloud episode and Joel was like, because we map stuff out before we record. And he's like, I just want to mention this DVD. And I'm just like, really? Is this like something people need? And then once I saw the trailer and I saw what was in, I was like, very good value for money.
Have you seen Kimberly's like paint? She has her own line of paint.
Oh yes, blues. And
that's what Joel's painted the other side of the wall. Yeah, the feature wall is Kimberly Blue.
Kimberly Blue. Oh my God.
Wait, actually, I mean, it isn't actually Kimberly Blue, but it could be there.
It could be. Yeah. So yeah, lockdown actually, I think did eventually lead to this in a way. I think that's true. I just had to work out like what it could be. And I think oral history was the answer.
Well, whatever it is next, we are ready and waiting to read it. We're ready and waiting to be interviewed if it's something.
No matter what it's about.
No matter what it's about. Like, yeah, I'll be there. Brilliant. So Michael, you have interviewed everyone under the sun, but who would you like to hear come on the Right Back At You podcast in the future?
Wow, that's a really good question. I mean, from this period, you've done so many people already.
Yeah, but we're still waiting for all the girlies to come on.
I think you should do like a Mucha special.
Yeah, okay.
Because I think that solo album got slightly forgotten. And obviously, I just think, you know, there's so much to her, so much you could sort of spin off and speak about that I think a mature one would be incredible.
Would she be good at talking about her solo album?
So I wondered if sort of, I wanted to speak to her obviously, and then I was like, God, you know, for an hour, this might be sort of a bit boring for her or just a bit like, but she seemed really up for it. And I think it's a case of like her not really being asked about that stuff. And so maybe she'd love it.
We'll ask you all about it.
Track by track.
It was like when I spoke to Nigel Dick for the book, who obviously is always asked about Baby One More Time video. I was like, no, I want to speak to you about Seeing Double, the S Club film. And he was like, no one has ever asked me anything about this film. Let's have a chat about it. Because he was just like, I don't get to speak about this normally. But he was the guy that did all of those, you know, when Westlife would have like a UK video and a US video and they were always different. Nigel was the guy that did all the US versions where they were like at some sort of bowling alley or diner or whatever.
Look, so, yeah. I need to, Nigel, I will ask you all about how did we get, like, what was Rachel's prep? She took the script. Did she do 6 months, you know, character
method
work?
Acting.
Yeah, I think they had about 3 minutes to learn their lines.
David, did we watch Seeing Double when we lived together?
Yeah, we did. Yeah, I remember thinking this is incredibly wild. No disrespect to Nigel, but yes.
Yeah, I got it on DVD. This was part of my eBay collection.
I have 2 copies of it on DVD.
Why not? Why when one just doesn't suffice?
Yeah, you need 2. Seeing Double.
Yeah.
Well, look, Mutia, you've heard it here.
Yeah, please.
Michael wants you on. We are ready and waiting to do a whole Mutia special. Michael, congratulations on all
thank
the success
you.
On the book. And thank you so much for having us as part of the book, like genuinely one of the most exciting things ever. And thank you very much for coming on the pod today. And
thank you for having me.
Being the star of our very first book club episode.
Where
can everyone follow you?
On Instagram and Twitter, X, Michael Cragg, at Michael Cragg.
All right, amazing. Thank you so much, Michael. This has been so much fun. You have been listening to Right Back At You, the 2000s pop music podcast. If you are loving what we are doing, hit that subscribe button, tell a friend, leave us a lovely 5-star review. Follow us at Right Back Pod on all social platforms. You can follow me at Dr_JoelB and you can follow him at...
@Zoe_Burkett at Hotmail. At Lovely Me.
Until next time, bye.
Bye.
Oh, Michael, thank you so, so much. Really
appreciate
it.
We were harmonising at the end there.
Watch out, sugar babes.
I'm Mutcha, by the way.
Okay.